This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could join us. It is Wake Up Call. Ron Culver on vacation today. So the opening ceremony is kicking off the Tokyo Olympics. Team USA basketball playing France on Sunday. Now, France is a pretty good team. I believe they beat them in the World Cup. But the United States comes in loaded, a big, huge roster of guys who wanted to be there, guys who want to play for their country. And albeit some of the newer additions are guys that are really exhausted. You know, Devin Booker, Chris Middleton are joining the team. They're exhausted. They just got through a finals run late in the season off of these sort of back-to-back years where it was all kind of crammed in together. And, of course, the bubble and all of those things that the bubble had while it was at Disney World. But nevertheless, these guys are playing for Team USA. Now, I get it if you're an athlete, especially in the NBA, and there's so many endorsements and your brand is global and all of the things that happen to you when you're a mega superstar. But I love the fact that the appeal of playing for Team USA still is there for some of these guys, that they want to do it. They want to play in the Olympics. I mentioned this earlier this week with Colin Morikawa when he won the British Open, and they asked him about going to Tokyo to play golf in the Olympics. And he said, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I get to be an Olympian, and forever in my life, I'll be known as an Olympic athlete. That is something that, you know, no matter what you do and no matter how accomplished you are as an athlete, if you don't do it, that's something you can't buy. It's something you can't get. You have to be on the Olympic team. You have to be a participant in the Olympics to be an Olympian. And some guys don't get an opportunity to do that, or they may turn down and then then accept a later invitation. Yeah, it's easy when guys say, I'm busy, I got a lot, I want to rest, I want to relax. If you're a golfer, yeah, it's got to be tough. You just got done 4 majors in a pretty brief period of time, and to go over to Tokyo with the Ryder Cup coming up in September. But you get to be an Olympian, and 4 years later, who knows where you'll be if you get a chance to do that again. Look, I think Team USA wins. I'm glad to see that the rest of the world is playing basketball on a level where they're not just participants in the throttling of everybody onwards to the Olympics. It's exactly what they wanted back in the early 90s. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio as we continue along this morning on a Friday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Hit Ron Culver up, too. Why not? He's on vacation. But, it would be cool if he came back and was like, oh, my God, look at all these tweets I got. So, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with 2 N's. I was mentioning it at the top, the U.S. Olympic basketball team, filled with our NBA stars, are the heavy favorites to win the gold medal. Of course, I wouldn't expect anything else. I don't think there's ever going to be a time in my life that another country is going to be the favorite over the United States to win the gold medal. But it is interesting. Here we are in 2021, and there is a conversation that France, for example, could really give the United States a little run in the Group A portion of the knockout stage. The United States expected to get through the knockout stage. But France has got a good team. They got Rudy Gobert on it. They've got Evan Fournier. Nicolas Batum is on that team as well. They got some really good players. I mean, this is exactly why the Dream Team was created, or what it was in the 90s, to do things like this, where a country like France has got a number of NBA guys, could say, yeah, we're going to use them for the Olympic Games. Australia is another team. They're in Group B that should be playing pretty good. Nigeria is pretty good. Spain, Slovenia, Australia, another couple of these teams that are pretty good to win and to medal. Nigeria is actually a pretty good team as well. But again, it all really focuses on the United States. But here's the thing, and if you've noticed this over the last couple of years, when you fill a team like France, for example, right, with NBA guys, right, or Australia has a few NBA guys. I think Joe Ingles is on that team. Patty Mills, I think, is on that team as well. there are a couple of guys that, you know these superstars that are on the U.S. team, right? Play against them on a regular basis. Maybe they're teammates. The wow factor is gone, right? Now, that's not to say individually a guy who's not in the NBA but plays for Team Australia isn't going to be impressed or wowed that he's, you know, up against Kevin Durant. And, you know, but it's definitely not like it was when this incarnation first came around in the early 90s, even beyond the Dream Team, right? The Dream Team was a little bit beyond special. I mean, it was a collection of, you know, the who's who of the NBA at the time. Like, nobody turned it down. They pushed Isaiah Thomas and told him he couldn't be on the team. It was, they knew when they were creating that, they were creating the greatest collection of NBA talent that existed on the globe, right? And so they, you would not turn it down over because you were tired. Like, if you had a chance to be on that, you were on that. Nowadays, like, LeBron isn't there. You know, like, you get some years where players aren't participating. Maybe I'll do another year, little injury, overcome this, don't really want. Back in 92, that wasn't the case. If we were going to do this, the United States was going to do it right. And I know I told you guys that, you know, if you're a little laxed on the history of this, the United States said, no, we don't actually want to have professionals in the Olympics. You don't want this rest of the world, because if you did, you know, you'll never win a gold medal ever again. But as I mentioned when I told you this story a while back, it wasn't about winning gold medals. That's not what this was about. It wasn't the rest of the world saying to the U.S., we're as good as you. It's not what they were doing. They knew the United States would win. They knew the United States would win games by 50 points. They knew that. They wanted to just capitalize on the amazing talent that they had that was infiltrating into the NBA. There was a marketability there that they couldn't use. If you're a small country and you have one player that's in the NBA, right? Just a small European country, for example, and you have one guy and he plays for the Boston Celtics, you couldn't use him. Like, he was just, all right, he's gone. He's playing in the NBA now. And you were a country and you were the Olympic Committee. You're like, I want to capitalize on this. We have an NBA player that can't play and represent us in the Olympics. Knowing by doing so, you were unleashing a firestorm of talent that the United States had in its professional ranks. Didn't matter. Right? Beat us by 50. We still get to market our guys. Our guys playing for us. And that's going to help us another way that you guys won't be able to see. And now think about this in 2021. Look at the names I just read off for France on that team, right? Evan Fournier, Rudy Gobert, Nicholas Batum, right? I mean, they've got a number of NBA guys on that team. Look at the team guys I mentioned on, you know, the Australian national team. That's a team that just beat the United States in an exhibition. I get it. It's an exhibition. But still, they've got some guys. There's NBA talent around the globe now. And in a way, you can say that even though the United States, outside of the Athens debacle, have dominated Olympic basketball and brought it back again, this was a success. This really was a success. Because it brought the globalization of this sport. And it allowed teams to say, you know what, Slovenia, we have one of the greatest basketball players in the NBA right now in Luka Doncic. And you know what? It might be good enough for us. It might be good enough for us. We might win some games in our group against Japan, against Argentina. We got Luka Doncic, for crying out loud. That's why this was important 30 years ago. And sure, I know if you were alive then, it was a blast. I mean, it really was a blast to see that level of talent in the Olympics just dominating everybody, to see the overreaction of teams, you know, the way I couldn't believe they were on the same court as Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, John Stockton, Charles Barkley. I mean, the list was incredible. But now, a couple of guys on the team are like, well, no, I played against those guys. In fact, I'm a teammate of him. And that's different. So yeah, the United States should win. It should win easily. But there's going to be some good basketball that's going to be played in these Olympics with some of these teams. And I do remember the 88, I was in school at the time, I was young at the time, but I do remember like 88, like the U.S. college teams struggled. And it sort of led to this idea that the U.S. was behind it. They were kind of tired of losing and, you know, whatnot. But that wasn't the case at all. We had really good college athletes. We could have, you know, we could win the gold if we put our act together. But it was slipping away a touch. It was. It's funny because I was talking about this yesterday with Ron. The men, you know, there's betting odds on the men winning the gold medal. They're high, but they're odds. There's not one for the women. Like, I couldn't find one for the women. There's not saying they're not out there, but I wouldn't be surprised if you could not just make a bet on the women to medal. Like, they should win by a million, our women's team. That hasn't quite caught up in a way that the men's situation has. But, they should, you know, not only medal, they should win the gold going away. You shouldn't be able to bet them to win the gold. It would take a monumental upset. It's like a Rulon Gardner miracle on the mat type of upset. Miracle on the ice upset for that to happen. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. When we come back, we're going to reset the Texas-Oklahoma situation. What will happen to the Big 12 if that does take place? And how would the SEC look and deal with a new 16-team conference if indeed they move over? That's next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Superstart batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts are designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Get dependable power and performance from a Superstart battery for your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, boat, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today, and their professional parts people can help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. By the way, yesterday I grilled hamburgers for the first time in a while, and I over-seasoned my wife's burger, and she didn't really eat it. I felt really horrible. She was really looking forward to it, and I made it with too much seasoning. I like the seasoning. We have like a burger seasoning, and I just added it to it, and I thought she would like it too, but she's like, oh, this has got way too much seasoning on it. She took a couple bites. She goes, I really can't finish this. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll finish it. But she thought that was a ploy. She thought that was what I did. So my advice this weekend, if you be careful, ask people if they really like their meat, you know, burgers seasoned a lot. I did not do that. And I've known my wife for 25 years. I should have known that. God bless her. College football's changing. The SEC could be getting Texas and Oklahoma. Talked about this in hour one. There was a meeting with the Big 12. They invited Texas and Oklahoma. Hey, you want to come in and be a part of this? And they were like, no. Like, okay, because we're actually going to be talking about you guys. No, we're good. We're good. And the league, you know, Big 12 said, well, we're going to make you stick to the bylines and the agreements, television agreements, that you agreed to. And I'm sure those schools were shaking in their boots with the idea of being forced to stay in the Big 12. So funny, this story. When this story first came out, when it started leaking, I immediately believed it. And I am not that kind of person. I am a little skeptical. I'm always like, all right, we'll see. Right? I did it with Aaron Rodgers. Remember draft day when a few media personalities said, done deal, Aaron Rodgers is going to the Denver Broncos? I'm like, yep, hold on. Been down this road before. Want to be first, not want to be right. That's how social media works. So I'll believe it when I see it. Haven't seen it yet, so I don't know. On this story, I bought it immediately. Immediately. It's like, of course they would want to go to the SEC. And I bet you they absolutely are talking about joining that conference. There, it's a whole new world now. There's money. There's broadcasting that's coming your way. I mean, Texas could make money on their own channel, piece of the SEC network. They're already sitting pretty anyway. But now they put themselves in the best conference in football. And here's the key. Why would they do that? Besides money, just the integrity of the game, why would they do that? I'll tell you. Because being a part of the SEC in this 16-team juggernaut, when you're expanding the college football playoff, you don't care if you lose a couple of games, but you guarantee yourself a number of games already on your schedule that are going to be good. Right? That was a, remember when the first playoff happened? Remember TCU and Baylor were the two top teams out of the Big 12? Remember they were fighting all year? They were going like, we're only picking four. Be careful, we're picking four. And they were really good. They didn't have a conference championship at the time. And they basically said to the committee, hey, committee, choose. Choose between these teams. We can't figure it out. We haven't crowned you. We're making them co-champions of the year. But you pick. And the big, and the committee went, yeah, Ohio State. Right? The, you join the SEC, you lose to Alabama and Tuscaloosa. Maybe you lose at home to LSU in a really tough, it won't matter. They're expanding this thing. There's going to be 12 teams eventually. It's going to be chaos to scramble for the teams that are trying to get in outside the SEC. The SEC could have six teams in a 12-team playoff. Are you kidding me? They'll be like the ACC of college basketball. You could have a mediocre year and be better than a team that has one loss in the Pac-12 because it's depending on your competition. But it's also a way to partner up your brand with the other big brands and just swim in the ocean of cash that is going to be coming your way because of it. Creating must-see matchups on a nightly basis, on a weekly basis, right? I mean, it's of course the story was true. Of course the story was. Now, again, I'm not saying that they do it. We don't know what the steps are to do it. I'm saying when the story came out that said that they were talking to the SEC, that was 100% believable, even if they denied it. I went to school at South Carolina, as many of you know, because I complain about the Gamecocks too much. But when I went to school there, they were an independent. So they were an independent, and they would play Georgia, and they would play West Virginia. They'd play Florida State. Sometimes they play Florida, right? Sometimes they would snag another SEC school, depending on who it was. They were an independent, so they're making their own schedule. NC State. But then a few years after, when I was there, a few years later, they joined the Southeastern Conference. And I remember being excited because they were in the SEC, right? And it was kind of the college football place to go if you were a school, especially in the southeastern part of the United States. But I knew that it came with a problem, which was South Carolina as an independent was good enough at times to be ranked in the top 25 and, you know, could make a little run at being undefeated through six games or so and just, you know, be in the conversation. And I knew that if they joined the SEC, that wasn't going to happen. The SEC was too good. And then there was this period of time, especially in the 90s, late 90s and into the 2000s, you know, when before Lou Holtz came on board, and even when Lou Holtz was there his first year, there was a section of the schedule that was called the Orange Crush schedule. Because for three consecutive games, South Carolina would play Tennessee, Florida, and then they would play Clemson. And they played Tennessee with Peyton Manning, and they would play Florida with Danny Werfel, and then they would play Clemson. A winnable game, but sometimes not, depends. And they would get throttled. I mean, throttled. They'd either win one game or none, never went 2-1, absolutely not even close going 3-0. That was the price they paid for playing in the SEC. Was no matter what they did, no matter how good they were, maybe there was a little upset, right? Maybe they upset Georgia, or maybe they upset LSU or something. I don't know. Whenever they would have a little momentum, this section of the schedule bogged them down because they weren't Peyton Manning good, they weren't Danny Werfel good, but it was. Okay, because they were in the Southeastern Conference. It's going to take time. And eventually it did. Lou Holtz had a good run there, and then Steve Spurrier got them to a point where they won 10-plus games in a three-year span, played in the SEC title game against Auburn, losing to Cam Newton. By the way, I'm still waiting for my South Carolina shirt as SEC champs when they figure out how that went down, nevertheless. But it was the association that mattered the most to me as a Gamecock. It was, We're in the same conference as Alabama and Auburn and Georgia and Tennessee and Florida. These iconic teams. We're now part of it. Texas and Oklahoma are not going to feel that at all. And Oklahoma shouldn't feel second best to any of the teams in that conference. Oklahoma has had a top 4 or 5 program since Lincoln Riley got there. Right? Texas has got some growing to do. Yes, Texas has got, how many times have we heard Texas is back, right? Over and over and over again. And you know what? They'll win a big game early in this season and we'll say it again because it seems to be the mantra of Texas football, right? But Oklahoma is, and their fans are not going to feel the same way I felt when South Carolina got into the conference. It's going to be a growing pain. It's going to take some time. You got to get used to the conference. You got to build it up. The recruits. No, 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 no. They are going to be coming in 2023. They got the third best quarterback on the board that's coming into town, right? Kid from California. Lincoln Riley knows how to throw an offense together. No, there should be a feeling of, no, we're coming here to win it. If you guys want to, participate in this, we're coming in to win it. You can even make the argument that Texas A&M and Missouri both sort of went through that a little bit too when they joined the conference. Maybe Texas A&M felt a little bit more like they could do some things. But I remember having conversations with people and, fellow SEC fans, and they would all say, when Missouri and Texas A&M get here, they're going to experience real football. Texas A&M, they think they play football, but they don't play SEC football. And the only thing they did was bring Johnny Manziel as he beat Alabama and won the Heisman Trophy. And Missouri, they played in like the SEC title game, I think the first 2 years that they were in the conference. It wasn't the same feeling of you were entering a new dimension of playing college football. Oh, you thought you were playing college football, but you weren't really playing college football. Like now you have to. No, those two schools came in and actually did really well right off the bat. Texas and Oklahoma, mostly Oklahoma, should feel that if they got into this conference and stepped in, they'd be on top of the pecking order. I mean, outside of Alabama, if they were just thrown into the West right now, outside of Alabama, who would beat them? List the teams. Ole Miss, nope. Don't have the defense. LSU, nope. Right? Auburn, nope. Mississippi State, nope. Who? Alabama and Oklahoma would be the game of the year. And there's nobody in the East. Nobody in the East that could hang with them. Georgia would give them a run. Georgia might beat them. I'll give that. Georgia's got a good team this year, so Georgia might beat them. But Florida, not with Emory Jones. I don't think they'd beat them. I know South Carolina wouldn't beat them, and I know Tennessee's not going to beat them. I mean, they're going to be top of the pecking. Now, Texas, I look as a sort of a mid-team, right? Texas, if they're playing well, Steve Sarkisian's offense works. That's going to take some time. But if it comes together, yeah, they'll lose. They could lose to Auburn, but beat Mississippi State. They could lose to Florida, but beat Tennessee. That they would be in the middle run, right? Maybe Kentucky gives them a hard time, but they'd crush Vanderbilt. Everybody crushes Vanderbilt. That's part of being Vanderbilt. Good baseball team, though. Hell of a baseball team. But that's the excitement of these teams coming in. No one should in the Southeast have a conversation about the validity of Oklahoma's presence in the conference. Right? You failed on that when Texas A&M and Oklahoma and Missouri had success right off the bat. Oklahoma should be right there if they get in, and Texas should be a middle of the team. You don't want to play in Austin. You might be able to beat at home. Depends. God, I hope it happens. I just want to see a mess. I want to see teams scrambling. I want to see the reshaping of these conferences, right? I just want to see the way greed and money and all that just gets into this sport even more than it already is, but it's more wide open. I got an analogy. I'm going to see if it works. I'm going to process it. I'm going to bring it up when we come back from the break. Something else blew up that was kept under wraps. Let's see if it works when I come back on Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit me up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. And hit me up and see if this analogy works. I rarely do this, because most of the time when I think of an analogy, I'm really confident in it, because I've thought about it. But this actually came to me as I was talking about college football. It just hit me. So I had time to process it during the break. So here's my analogy, or my comparison to what college football is going through, and sort of the acceptance of what college football is going through. Right now, the sport has broken down everything. Everything we thought was serious about college athletics, and even football, college football together, has been just destroyed. We lived in a world where you don't, for years and years and years, decades, you don't pay players, you don't give them money. If you give them money, you're in serious trouble. The bowl games are can't be touched, right? Playoff is a ridiculous idea. There's too much money in the bowl games. All of that was driven into the fans for years. You better accept this world that we're talking about. And when people would say, you know, these rules don't make very much sense, and why can't we have a playoff? This is not as bad as you think it's going to be. The powers that be said, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. What do you want? The Rose Bowl to be part of a playoff? Are you crazy? The Rose Bowl? That is stupid. And then this idea of paying athletes. Oh, you just want athletes to just get paid money? Student athletes? Education isn't good enough? What are you talking about? We're not paying our athletes. No one's going to give them a check. No. We can't have them taking jobs and giving money and endorsements. It's ridiculous. And it was driven. Now we live in a world where all of that's broken down and it's wide open and everyone's accepting it. Everyone loves the idea of a 12-team playoff. Everyone's embracing name, image, and likeness, right? Coaches are afraid to even speak against it because they know recruiting would be hurt if a player knew that the coach hated the idea of them making $1 million in endorsements if they became a star. You know what is similar? Marijuana. Remember everybody for years and years and years, gateway drug, can't take it. No, it's illegal. Throw them in jail. You get caught with it, prison. And then a couple of states went, we'll legalize it medically. And then, no, we'll legalize it altogether. And then other states went, that's nuts, but it kind of looks cool the way you're collecting a lot of money. So then more and more states did it. Now, you know, I've been in this business a while, the last 10 years, I've seen all sorts of, you know, I've been doing, when I was local in Denver, we used to do marijuana distributor ads all the time. It has now become part of the thing we were wondering, why did we raise a fuss in the first place? Right? That's, to me, is a similar way we're seeing college athletics. Everything we thought we could never do and never accept, we're not only accepting and embracing and living with a new world. Living in a new world with it. And it's the same thing, marijuana. I don't know if that works, but it was the thing that came to me as I was talking in the last segment, just hit me. And so I processed it and I threw it out there. Sean, you said you had a question for me?
Yeah, we were talking about F1 during the breaks.
Yes.
And I know that you are maybe one of the most well-informed F1 fans in this country, definitely the most well-informed person I have access to.
Oh, well, thank you. No, I appreciate that.
So my F1 101 question is, why are there some race teams, Mercedes, McLaren, their car companies, car manufacturers, and then there's also Red Bull, which to my knowledge only makes energy drinks? How does that happen? How does that work?
The simple answer is it depends on if the company wants to invest money into having a Formula One race team or any race team for that matter. So Red Bull has a ton of money. They put it in motorsports. They put it in all sorts of things, right? Motorbikes and, you know, just, you know, the sports that skateboarding, all those type of sports. So they saw an opportunity because of the global reach of the sport to say, you know what? We're going to throw our money in this and we'll have a team. And some teams come in and do exactly that. And some teams don't. So, they can't.
So I assume McLaren uses McLaren engines.
No.
Oh,
No, you will pick it. You will pick an engine manufacturer. So
that's different.
Red Bull for years used Renault engines, and then they recently went to a Honda engine. And so, Mercedes. There are teams that use Mercedes engines. So it's all you can do that. Ferrari engines, for that matter.
Is there a Honda racing team?
No, but there is. Honda is directly involved with the engine process. Now, Red Bull is building their own engine department. Honda is leaving the sport, and Red Bull decided to build their own engine. So they are creating, as we speak, a whole engine building department. But you as a team would go find an engine distributor, and it can be one of the teams that builds the engines. It doesn't matter. You're going to pay for it, so you just pay for it.
So is there any inherent advantage? So you said Mercedes has an engine. There's a Mercedes engine.
Yes.
Is there an advantage that Mercedes, the racing team, that Lewis Hamilton, let's say, and Toto Wolff have over another team that uses a Mercedes engine? Is there any sort of...
Yeah, the way the car is built, the amount of R&D that they can put into it, as it's a sport where if you're the rich get richer. So if you continue to run in the top part of the team, if you win races and you win the Constructors' Championship, you get more money, and that money can be thrown right back into the team. Now, next year, there's going to be a cost cap, so everybody's going to be paying, will be paying about the same for the construction of the car and the research and development of the car. So, but before that, what we're now is just this wide open R&D. So you can grow your engine and you can grow your development, more time in the wind tunnel, more engineers on staff. It's like a team. McLaren has like 1,000 people that work on R&D and whatnot for different racing, different racing venues that they have, different racing departments that they have, but they're all basically doing the same thing, which is R&D research and building parts. You have to build a Formula One car yourself. The only thing that you buy is your engine, but you have to build the car yourself.
So
you have to create all those parts.
So, okay. And then there's like official tires, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, that's Pirelli.
Pirelli, okay.
Yeah, they came with the tires, and they have 3 different types of tires. And so you use the tires that they set. So they'll set 3 range of tires per race. So they'll say, at this particular circuit, we're using a harder tire, and then down, and then you use those. And then you can decide which tires you want to use.
Okay.
And hard, medium, or soft.
So, like I said, during the breaks, we've been talking about this, and just so the audience peek behind the curtain, I'm going to be working with Tony a lot next week, and the plan is that I'm going to watch the Netflix Drive to Survive, and I think something we could do is I come in with some questions. I watch an episode
sure.
or two.
I'd be more than happy to do that.
Come in with a question or, like F1 101, F1 for dummies kind of
You know, I was talking to Ron about this because I said there's an example here where if you are a sport that's trying to get a foothold in the United States, right, where you say like soccer, right, European League soccer, Premier League soccer. Right. If you like they've had reality shows where people kind of caught into them and said, yeah, now I'm in. That's exactly what this sport had done. Formula One had done. They created this reality show and they said, hey, watch this. You'll get to know the people. You'll get to know some of the drama. You'll get to know some of the stories. And then the racing sort of comes in naturally. Right. Once you know the participants, then it makes watching the races a little easier. You know who they are. You know the stories behind the teams. You know if they are good, had success, not good, not having success. And reality shows can work that way. Like, we look at Hard Knocks in the NFL is almost like, because we all follow the NFL, it's almost like an added little bonus, right? Well, we're already drinking the Kool-Aid, if you will, right, of what the NFL delivers us. Mm-hmm. But imagine if you didn't know a lot about the NFL. Imagine if, you grew up and parents didn't like sports, people around you didn't really like sports, but now you're like, I kind of want to be into football, and you watched Hard Knocks. You would say, all right, I'm into this team, whoever they're featuring, right? I've got to know the coach and the players and their stories, and now I'm a little bit more curious on how they're going to be playing out, and that's what this does. I think Major League Baseball should do something like this for the younger fans. Be like, create some, follow the Padres around for like 3 weeks, then follow the Yankees for 3 weeks, and just create these little documentary shows where you get to know the players and off the field stuff and drama and things like that. It makes people, it attracts people in a way that you just can't do when you just throw it on TV and people are flipping through the channels.
Yeah.
And by the way, nobody flips through the channels. They flip through the guide.
Yeah, I mean, they flip through YouTube
right now.
Or like Twitter and TikTok stuff.
So you watch this series. My son didn't know anything about it. He caught the series and then he sent it to me because he knew I liked racing. And now it's something we share. You know, it's something that he loves. I mean, now he is all in. He's got the video game, big Max Verstappen fan. He's all in. And it sort of allowed me to connect with him on other sports he's just not interested in. He's not a baseball fan. Doesn't really. I made a joke with my daughter because I watched the NBA with my daughter. And I also watch a lot of NFL with her. I said, you know, I watch Formula One with your brother, but I watch most of the sports I have to watch with you. She kind of got a kick out of that. But that's sort of a way I've connected with him is he was watching this series and then found a real interest in that sport. And then knowing I had covered the sport for years and years, we connected. But I don't think I could have gotten him into it without an inside behind the curtain look. And I do think it's a larger story for sports leagues that are trying to get a foothold in the United States. Reality shows just seem to work. People like them.
Yeah. Right? Like you said with baseball, even if they did like a weekly, like, you know, 15-minute like YouTube video that they tweet out and stuff about, yeah, like in the dugout, in the clubhouse with the Padres or the Yankees or, you know, pick a team every week or something like that. I think even that, not even a big Netflix documentary, like just a weekly kind of showcase the personalities of Fernando Tatis and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and all these stars that they have. It's something especially the MLB should be looking into.
One thing about that series, Drive to Survive, amongst Formula One fans is you'll see it, at least I see it on Twitter, well, there'll be something, an incident, like this weekend there was a big crash between two of the leaders, or the fireball explosion last year in Bahrain for Romain Grosjean. People are anticipating how the documentary will play that out. Will there be more insight into that situation? Will we see behind the scenes throwing of things and anger and you know, the immediate reaction that we don't have access to? And think about that in Major League Baseball. Like, think about it if Major League Baseball gave you a documentary at the end of the season where a segment of it was about the pine tar stuff, the rosin stuff, the spider tack stuff, right? Think about if you could watch an episode where you got behind the scenes with pitchers being told, you know, let me check your pockets, and then their reaction, like you got a different view of that, or a bench clearing brawl or something along those lines, or what's going on with the Dodgers and how they're dealing the serious accusations of Trevor Bauer. If there was more of an insight, it was deeper, it allowed, because one thing about that series is drivers and team principals will talk openly about this. They'll say, they sit down in the chair and they none of them say no comment. They're like, yeah, I'll tell you right now, this was terrible, and they did this, and I was angry. And, you know, imagine if baseball's openness, if they had an openness to baseball where at the end of the season in the winter, you got a six-episode series, and it was all the inside stuff that went on in the season. Yeah, it would really help the game a lot, especially in a younger generation that loves to devour this kind of stuff. They love this kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting way to market sports. So that's a very good question. All right, as we continue along, it's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Michael on Twitter, okay, I'm not a racing fan. The only sport I could never get into. I'd rather watch America's Cup yacht racing than auto racing, but you've piqued my interest with Drive to Survive. Expect questions coming from me also. I would be more than happy to take them. Yacht racing? Come on, Dennis Conner back in the 80s with winning the America's Cup? That was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It was him and Ronald Reagan when they won America. I had a math teacher. I was kind of known as a sports geek, you know, in school. Not really, I mean, geek, I use it lightly, but people knew I knew a lot about sports. And I read Sports Illustrated cover to cover. I watched a lot of sports. That's what I wanted to do for a living, so I knew I had to pay a lot of attention to it. And I remember my math teacher, Mr. Bickford. He was a really good guy, but he was really into the America's Cup. Like, that was his thing. And I remember reading, like, I read all about Dennis Conner. And so we would have conversations, And I kid you not, I really didn't know what I was talking about. But I was able to sort of, you know, fudge my way through it, if you will, to use a lighter term. It's like, I wasn't really an expert on the America's Cup, but I read so much about it that I could have a real conversation with them about who the what the competition was and all that. It's crazy.
That was your first sports radio experience.
That really was,
not
right?
Not watching the game or whatever, not understanding it. And just...
That's right. That's when I realized I could do this for a living, right? Like I could read just one article and pretend to be an expert on it. So if I come back like sometime in the near future and I start bragging about my knowledge of English darts, then you'll know like he either knows English darts or he read one quick article on English darts.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we do during the Olympics, right? That's all we do.
Oh, I know. That's a good point. That's the one thing. I have a number of friends who have done play-by-play for on radio for the Olympic Games. They've gone, you know, gone done play-by-play. They do sports they've never done before. And they have a crash course in it. But when they do it, they have to sound like they follow it with a passion. Like, yeah, we're here at the archery competition. This is so-and-so. And boy, that was exciting 5 weeks ago when they won the Italian Open. And they didn't watch the Italian Open. They just read about it in a pamphlet. All right, Jake Asman shows next. We will have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. It's Wake Up Call Sportsman Radio.